2:30 to 4 Monday to Friday. It is the Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you. Going to the phone lines, our guest today, as he's kind enough to take time every week to hop on the program, Ryan Burns with us. He covers the Gophers for Gopher Illustrated, and you can find his work through that outlet at gopherillustrated.com. Ryan, as always, we appreciate it. The Gophers, they've been catching a couple of teams at the right time this year, and I'm not suggesting that they wouldn't have run over Middle Tennessee State anyways, but they caught them at a time with the starting quarterback out. And now this weekend, what do you make of Maryland, who's going to be on their third string QB?
You're right. Minnesota has been able to run into some teams in a nice time. And you know what? For the amount of breaks that Minnesota hasn't caught over the years, I am more than fine with taking every one of these breaks. I mean, you mentioned it. The previous week of the previous game that Minnesota had, they played Middle Tennessee State without their starting quarterback, who had thrown for 30 touchdowns the previous season. And then halfway through the second quarter, their best skill player, someone that's going to be playing in the NFL, Richie James, goes out and rolls his ankle. So Middle Tennessee doesn't have their two best players on offense for the remainder of the game, so they didn't really have a shot. So you look at this Maryland team coming in this weekend, I thought it was going to actually be a pretty good game, and I still think it has the opportunity to be. But the second-string quarterback for Maryland, Kasim Hill, someone who is an Under Armour All-American, a four-star kid, starting as a true freshman there with their starter going out against Maryland, he tears his ACL and becomes the second Maryland quarterback to tear his ACL through three games. So that's not really a good thing, obviously, for the Terrapins. So you're going to be looking at a kid from Indianapolis who's a true sophomore starting as quarterback three, and his name is Max Bortenschlager. So Minnesota's going to be able to face QB3 for Maryland. They still do have some very tremendously talented players on that Maryland offense, one by the name of Ty Johnson, who is averaging over 10 yards a carry on 28 touches already. So, I mean, Maryland does have some skill position players, but I expect Minnesota to load the box. But, again, you mentioned it. I feel zero sympathy for anybody trying to suggest that Minnesota's catching a break, because the amount of breaks they haven't gotten over the years are quite staggering in my mind. So Minnesota being able to continue to catching breaks during a season is a much-needed thing.
If you take away the Minnesota aspect of it, knowing that that is Maryland's opponent this week, and I feel for Maryland a little bit. They hung up half a hundred on Texas in Texas in the season opener, and immediately after that game, well, Pigram tore his ACL, their then-starting quarterback, but we didn't know the significance of the injury immediately after the game. And so I was like, wow, Minnesota's opener against Maryland all of a sudden looks like it's going to be a dangerous opponent. Like you said, it still could be. With Minnesota's defense on that side of the ball, we know they haven't yielded a second half point. We know part of that is the nature of the opponents. It's still going to be hard to get a peg on that defense, especially with this now being the case at least through this week, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we're not going to really know how capable this defense is. And so we look at next week's game against Purdue, where Purdue has played significantly better than anybody thought that Jeff Brohm was going to have that team looking in year one. Again, you see them being able to take Louisville to the wire in the opener. Then they head down to Missouri, put a drumming on that team. And they stayed with Michigan until the fourth quarter last week. Again, this is a team that hasn't won a whole lot of games in the last four, five, 6 years. And now Jeff Brohm comes in, a little bit of a culture change, and he's got that team playing extremely well. So Minnesota is going to be tested at every position on offense outside of quarterback. But again, we're going to have to see how capable Max Bortenschlager is and how capable Rob Smith is in terms of generating pressure against Mr. Bortenschlager. Because again, you put the number three quarterback in situations that he's not comfortable in, which is seeing pressure coming in his face from the interior and then getting your edge pass rushers off the side too. Again, he's going to make some questionable throws more than likely. And that's where guys such as Jacob Huff, Antoine Winfield, and your assortment of Gopher linebackers have to take advantage.
All of this certainly has a domino effect of sorts, and with all that news surrounding Maryland now going with their third-string quarterback, at last check I saw, and that was this morning, the Gophers were 12.5-point favorites. Does that line sound right to you, considering what we saw with Maryland against Central Florida when they went to their third-stringer last week?
Well, Fleck talked about it the other day, and that was that it's a little bit different kind of a situation to just throw your second-string quarterback in during a game and have him play the majority of the game because he wasn't involved in game plan. He didn't get the reps. Now he's going to be able to have a week to prepare for Minnesota, and I do expect a multitude of different players trying to play quarterback for Maryland. So you're going to see the running back probably take some wildcat snaps. They have a couple of the tremendously talented receivers as well. I mean, you're going to see them try to be extremely creative because they know that they have to hide their quarterback three because, again, he's the quarterback three for a reason on a Big Ten team. So it is going to be extremely interesting to see what Mr. Bortenschlager looks like and what Rob Smith can game plan for.
Ryan Burns, our guest this afternoon here on The Blitz, covers the Gophers for Gopher Illustrated. Find his work through that outlet at gopherillustrated.com. Minnesota, as we know, is coming off a bye week. Who did that off week benefit the most as these guys sort of got a breath of fresh air before the Big Ten slate begins?
They're two best players on offense in Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks. Fleck talked about it during his KFan appearance that if Minnesota had to play a game last week, Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks wouldn't have likely played now. I don't think that's 100% the truth, because I know that Shannon Brooks could have played against Middle Tennessee State. He was dealing with a shoulder stinger, and they wanted to make sure that he had all the stability and all the numbness and all the pain out of that shoulder and to give him an extra 2 weeks to recover from that. Now, Rodney Smith, folks will remember, banged up his head pretty good on the final play of the first half. So now that I would assume he's through the concussion protocol, he practiced both days so far. Both running backs have practiced in both practices thus far this week, so that's a very encouraging sign. So you look at Minnesota trying to get their two-headed running attack back, that's a very good thing. I also think the guys in the offensive line and the defensive line, it always benefits them, because for the amount of pounding they have to go against for 65, 70 plays a game, I mean, it's a lot of toll on that body, especially early in the season. Now starts the gauntlet, though, because you look at the rest of this. You had three non-conference games. Now you have a bye. Now you have to have a straight shot for the next 8-9 weeks all the way through Big Ten conference play. Now that's going to be quite a test, especially once we get to the latter half of October. Again, they've been playing for 5 or 6 weeks. Now it's Iowa, Michigan, Nebraska. I mean, especially with all the, you know, the cold weather that comes into the games, too. But again, that bye week benefits no one more than those two running backs.
Yeah, you brought them up, Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks. Now, last year, Connor Rota made the spot start at Maryland. The Gophers picked up the win. I remember Rodney Smith had over 140 yards, a couple of touchdowns. Shannon Brooks had a good game as well. I don't remember what his final stats were, but both of them fared well against Maryland. And, like, hey, I get it, it's a new year and it's a new regime with P.J. Fleck, but it would be foolish to expect them to shy away from feeding those two once again against Maryland, correct?
Right. I mean, we've talked about this. Minnesota's running splits and passing splits have been pretty dramatic thus far. Minnesota's run the ball 70-75% of the time, and that's not going to stay that way. They're still going to get a majority of the lion's share of the offensive plays, but I expect that to move a lot closer to 55-45 or 60-40, because Minnesota's going to have to pass the ball in Big Ten play. You're still not going to shy away from giving Shannon Brooks and Rodney Smith somewhere between 17 to 20 touches each a game. Because, again, once the ball gets in their hands, they're one of the most dynamic, or they may be the most dynamic player that Minnesota has on offense. But Minnesota's going to have to work on that passing game, and that's going to have to start this week. Because if you're Maryland and you look at the game tape Minnesota's showed thus far, it's that the receivers haven't had a really good chance to win on the outside. So what does that mean? That means if I was the opposing defensive coordinator for Maryland, I would put 7 guys in the box at all times, maybe even 8, and then you just have press man coverage on the outside, one-on-one coverage. And yes, that leaves your defensive backs on an island, but it also makes sure that, again, make Connor Rota make the throw. Make Tyler Johnson go up and get it. Make Demetrius Douglas go up and get it. I mean, Minnesota hasn't shown the ability to do that thus far in 2017. So while it is going to be a steady dose of Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks throughout the rest of the Big Ten schedule, Minnesota's going to have to improve on that passing game.
I'm going to ask you an unfair question that just popped into my mind, and I think perhaps we're splitting hairs, and I'm looking ahead, but which one, Shannon or Rodney, project better on the next level?
Oh, I mean, that's a good question. I think that probably Shannon Brooks, but I think he's going to have not as long of a career just because of his playing style, because of how aggressive he is. You know, instead of trying to go out of bounds 15 yards downfield, he's trying to deliver a hit 15 yards downfield to try and get the extra 3 yards, where Rodney is much more content to once he gets 15. You know, he doesn't want to take another hit. But, I mean, both players, I think, have an absolute opportunity to play at the next level. Now, we're going to see how they continue to perform these next 8 games, and potentially 9 games here once Minnesota gets a bowl. And, again, I wouldn't be surprised to see one of them, if not both, potentially test the NFL waters. I think that, especially Rodney Smith, I mean, you don't see a Big Ten back rush for back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, then come back for another one. What does he have left to prove if he's got double-digit touchdowns, 1,000 rushing yards behind an offensive line that hasn't tremendously been very good for him in the run-blocking game? So appreciate Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks while you can, folks.
Ryan Burns of Gopher Illustrated hopping on the program this afternoon. You mentioned Connor Rota and the offense. They're going to have to start airing it out more. Big Ten play kicking off this weekend against Maryland. Part of that, too, is like we can't expect the Gophers. They handled Buffalo. It was 17-7. Never felt like the Gophers were really threatened in that game to lose it, even though it was a one-possession game for much of the second half. Then they blow out Oregon State in the second half. They blow out Middle Tennessee State without their quarterback. You can't expect that to keep up with the Gophers, so you got to get Connor Rota sort of acclimated with needing to make plays, and I think you'd like to see it against Maryland regardless of what the score is, because in future weeks here in conference play, the Gophers might be in some barn burners.
Absolutely, and I think you set that up extremely well, and that's that. I think this week in particular, I think Minnesota's going to have to work on that play-action game, because I do anticipate Maryland stacking the box, and Minnesota's offensive line has been absolutely elite in pass protection. They've only given up one sack, and Connor Rota has had forever to throw back there. So if you're going to have him on a deep play-action drop, that means you're going to have, you know, whether it's Demetrius Douglas, Phillip Howard, Tyler Johnson streaking across the field, he's got to be able to hit that crossing route 40, 50 yards downfield and put it accurately, and he can't short arm it like he did on his atrocious interception on that fade ball to Brandon Langan. So the passing game is an absolute work in progress. It's something that needs to continue to be worked on this week. We haven't really seen it, especially in the second half of games. I mean, we saw it in the first half against Oregon State where Rota was extremely efficient. You saw it somewhat against Buffalo. You saw it a little bit against Middle Tennessee, but it's a definite work in progress that Kirk Ciarrocca needs to get into effect. Now, I think as much as we talk about the downfield passing game, where Minnesota also has to work on is in the short passing game and the bubble screens and the wheel routes, trying to stretch this outward in terms of if you're going to put 7-8 guys in the box, where aren't there guys then? Well, that's outside the hashes then. So, you know, work in those quick, you know, short passes to the running backs, those bubble screens to your receivers. Because if you're just going to completely abandon the read option like Minnesota has with Connor Rota, you're going to have to find a way to still stretch it outside and still present an outside threat. But the passing game is something I'm going to have a definite eye on come Saturday morning.
You would assume and hope that as the season progresses and moves onward with Connor Rota that he gets more and more comfortable. As you watch him, Ryan Burns, has that been the case, especially now that he is the guy, he is QB1 all by himself?
Yeah, you can definitely see the confidence growing in him, because in game one I thought he was extremely tentative. He didn't trust what his eyes saw. He didn't trust what his legs. And then you saw the progression he made to game two where he goes 7 of 8 in the first half for 140 yards in a score, and then he doesn't have to pass in the second half. But you just saw kind of the composure he had, his ability to make some throws in the pouring rain on third down. You're like, well, that's a throw I don't expect you to make last week, but you clearly stepped up in the pocket. He rolled out, delivered an accurate throw. Now, I think that he kind of needed to take a bigger step going into game three, but you can see the confidence growing in them. And that's such a huge part of the quarterback position because everyone probably listening to this has seen unconfident quarterback play, someone who is clearly struggling, fighting a bunch of different things in his head. Well, once you have a clear head as a quarterback and you're able to trust your eyes, trust that you have the arm to be, you know, able to make that tough throw into tough coverage, I mean, it's fun to watch. And now Connor Rota is going to have to keep that up. And if I was Kirk Ciarrocca come the first quarter this weekend, I would try to game plan him to, you know, hit on these short to intermediate throws, these 5 to 10 yard throws, some quick hitches, some slants, some skinny posts. You know, just trying to get the confidence in your quarterback, knowing that you're probably going to need him in the second, third, and fourth quarter. But you have to start building that confidence early in games.
We've talked about the offense a lot, so I'm going to ask you about the defense. Last note on this weekend's game. Keys in the game for the defense going against that Maryland offense will be what for the Gophers?
Stop the run, something that they've been very effective and efficient at throughout three games. I mean, you've seen the numerous statistics on social media. Minnesota is the number one scoring defense in all the land. They're only giving up 8 points a game. You talked about it as well. They haven't given up a single second-half point yet. They've only given up 160 total yards in the second half. Like 50, 53, 54 a game. And they've been absolutely sensational in getting off the field on third down. They're getting off the field 75% of the time on third down. I mean, that's absolutely sensational. So when you're looking at going against QB3 for Maryland, you have to be able to stop the run, stop Tyler Johnson, the Maryland version of Tyler Johnson, who is averaging, again, over 10 yards a carry on 28 carries. Like, that's insane efficiency. I mean, he is an extremely talented player. They have a very good receiver by the name of DJ Moore as well. You have to be able to create pressure and stop the run. So stop the run has to be the number one priority to put Bortenschlager in these deep, you know, passing situations, third and seven, third and six, third and nine, to get Blake Cashman on the field, to get Carter Kaufman on the field, Kamal Martin on the field. And if you're able to do that, I think they're going to find a lot of success.
You can find his work at gopherillustrated.com. Ryan Burns is our guest this afternoon. We'll finish up. I quickly bounce around the Big Ten. Wanted to get your thoughts, pick your brain a little bit, and then we'll make some picks. Last week, you know, the Gophers were off, but there was still Big Ten football to be consumed. I'm wondering what caught your eye. There were two primetime games. Iowa and Penn State gave us a thriller, while Michigan State laid an egg. What caught your eye last weekend?
Saquon Barkley from Penn State, their running back, is as talented of a running back as I have seen in my time covering college football. I mean, he did everything for that Penn State team to try and get them a victory. He rushes for over 210 yards on 28 carries. He has 12 receptions in the passing game. I mean, and you saw him hurdle a guy. You saw him bounce out of so many different defenders. It's just the amount of running back talent that have come into the NFL in the last couple of years. I mean, you've been able to see it on display. Dalvin Cook for the Minnesota Vikings looks absolutely, you know, he looks fantastic here through the first couple of weeks. Christian McCaffrey, he has over 100 receiving yards last week. Leonard Fournette for the Jaguars. You've seen Kareem Hunt for the Kansas City Chiefs. I think Saquon Barkley is even more talented than any of them.
Wow.
He just has the ability to do so many different things. He is your traditional three-down running back. And, I mean, he does everything for Penn State. And it was that game in particular, I mean, just showcased everything. I mean, he was a returner. Again, he rushes for over 200 yards on the ground. He has 12 receptions in the passing game. I mean, he is Penn State's offense. And I just think that people need to be able to appreciate the number or just the high level of running back talent throughout the Big Ten. And even looking at Iowa in that same facet, Akram Wadley was absolutely fantastic for Iowa as well. He has that long, I believe it was a long screen or a long little pass there that he gets Iowa the lead late. Again, he's a very talented running back too. So the amount of running back talent in the Big Ten is astounding.
I think I saw Saquon Barkley leads the Big Ten in receiving yards, and he's a running back, which is phenomenal.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, he can do everything for his team, and I cannot wait. And I talked about this with some other different people in the media. I mean, Saquon Barkley is going to be a top 10 pick. He's going to probably be a top 5 pick because someone's going to fall in love with the amount of durability he has and the multifaceted kind of game he brings as a running back. It's just something you don't find very often, and I cannot wait to see him at the next level.
Penn State, the best team in the Big Ten right now?
Oh, well, you look at what the big dogs in the Big Ten did last week. Penn State just, you probably watched the game. They snuck past Iowa on the last second play by McSorley, who did the same thing against Minnesota last year. Michigan really struggles with Purdue. I understand that Michigan's quarterback was knocked out early in that one. And then Ohio State runs away from the Fighting Rebels down there in UNLV. It's tough. I don't think that any one of those top three teams have really separated themselves. I'm going to be very curious to see, because each one of them has problems they have to work on. I mean, Penn State's offense really couldn't get going because of their offensive line. And Michigan can't really get going because on their offensive side of the ball, they can't get consistent play from their quarterback. And Ohio State is going to have to win out if they want another shot at the playoff. Again, I'm well aware of what, you know, the expectations are for Wisconsin. I don't think that they can really, you know, compete with the likes of those three teams. But it's going to be certainly interesting to kind of follow here as we get later and later with October and November Big Ten play approaching.
You brought up Michigan. I don't know if you saw it. I'm assuming you did. Jim Harbaugh, talking to the media either yesterday, maybe the day before that, had a serious gripe about Purdue's visiting locker room, and there was no AC, and he said there was a table in there that looked like it was from the 1920s, so on and so forth, and he wasn't too pleased with it whatsoever. And I saw, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are about that. And I also saw this list that someone at ESPN posted, and it was from a former Big Ten assistant coach, and he assessed 12 of the visiting locker rooms very quickly and very simply, and he said Illinois pathetic, Purdue pathetic, Nebraska okay, Wisconsin okay, so on and so forth. The only good one was Minnesota. He said Minnesota was nice, Ohio State below average, Penn State just okay, and he went through all the teams, and Minnesota was the only one that he said, yeah, it's actually pretty nice. What'd you make of Jim Harbaugh's comments, and does he have a case?
I think he does. And again, I've seen some back and forth on both sides of the fence about this, but I mean, you heard, or and if you haven't heard, you know, go on the Google machine and kind of look in what Jim Harbaugh's talking about. For folks who don't remember last weekend, it was extremely hot, extremely humid across the Midwest. I believe Saturday afternoon here in the cities where I was, it was 93, 94 degrees and humid. Now, imagine going into a locker room in that kind of a temperature and not having any air conditioning or fans. So you're in an enclosed space with 90-plus guys who are like 250 pounds each, and it's 110-plus degrees. Plus, you know, fans are able to watch the guys change with how the locker room is set up. I mean, it's a very weird deal. And, I mean, you talked about Minnesota's visiting locker room, and that doesn't surprise me with how good it's been. I've been in there. I mean, Minnesota, when they built TCF Bank Stadium, made sure that opposing locker rooms were, you know, adequately handled. And I think the days of, you know, in the 40s and 50s when, or even Iowa, I think, has painted the walls in their locker room pink to try and mellow down their opponents. I mean, folks, it really doesn't matter in terms of trying to get the edge nowadays. Like, just make sure that all of your facilities for the opposing team are adequate. And, you know, Jim Harbaugh addressed it. Purdue's aren't adequate. So I just think the days of trying to get every advantage, you know, back when Purdue Stadium was built, you wanted to try and get every kind of little advantage that you could, especially, I mean, if you're a team like Purdue and you can't win a game to save your life, you need all the help you can get. But I just think those days are behind us. So I hope that some opposing Big Ten athletic directors kind of take this a little bit seriously and spend a little bit and try to upgrade their opposing game facilities.
We'll finish up, as always, getting three picks from you. It's insane, man. You went 3-0 in week one, 0-3 in week two, 3-0 in week three, and then 0-3 again last week. So it is the definition of a hit or miss with you. This week we'll start with number 5 USC at number 16 Washington State.
I am not a proponent of Washington State. And I was actually thinking about those picks as I was watching the games last weekend. I remember I had so much just conviction in Mississippi State, and then I get drummed at home by a true freshman quarterback by Jake Fromm, and I was just, oh, I'm going to have to live this down in the upcoming week. But I'm going to take the Trojans. I understand, again, a road favorite. But, again, for someone who saw this Washington State team up close when Minnesota played them out there in San Diego last year, I think that USC is much more talented. I'm not a big Luke Falk guy. I understand that he's got 14 touchdowns through four games. But folks don't remember that he was benched against Boise State, and Washington State had to come back and win that game. So I'm going to go USC.
Number 2, Clemson at number 12, Virginia Tech. I imagine it's hard to pick against Clemson, even though they're on the road against a top 15 team.
I am going to pick Clemson. Again, I don't really like taking road favorites, especially in this kind of situation. But the way Clemson has been playing to start this season is extremely impressive. They've been extremely impressive, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You saw what they did against Louisville. Plus, Virginia Tech's got a true freshman starter in Josh Jackson at quarterback. So I think Clemson's going to be able to be extremely aggressive with him on defense, show him some different looks, and I think they're going to be able to come out with a victory.
Last one for you, going right back to the well. Number 24, Mississippi State at number 13, Auburn.
You're killing me. You are absolutely killing me, because I'm going to pick Auburn here, and this is going to be the week that Mississippi State's defense bounces back. But if I've talked about this on Gopher Illustrated this week. I think that if you're going to pick a team to challenge Alabama in the SEC right now, it's going to be Auburn. I understand that they already have a loss in the season, but I think that this team is going to continue to grow and grow and grow, and I like the fact that they're at home, so I will go with Auburn.
USC, Clemson, Auburn are the picks. Find his work at gopherillustrated.com. Ryan, as always, we appreciate it.
Sounds good, my friend. I'll talk to you next week.
We're going to put a bow on the show coming up next.